News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Sunday, the 10th of August, Anno Domini 2008, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can lose, a few things you can choose. And let's start with this week's poll, as we've begun to do lately. Gadget lovers were dealt a blow on Wednesday when two researchers outlined what they called a hole during a Black Hat presentation. You know, the Black Hat conference is going on. All the hackers get together and tell each other where all the holes are in all the software. The attacker can forcibly install Google gadgets. They can read the victim's search history over once a malicious gadget has been installed. In some specific circumstances, they can also attack other Google gadgets. They can fish usernames and passwords from victims and so on. The sky is the limit once the browser is under the control of an attacker, and that point is exacerbated by the fact that people trust Google to be a trustworthy domain, making the attacks even easier. Bob Hansen, who is known as RSnake, a founder of security consultancy SecTheory, said that the users who are most vulnerable are those who use Google and specifically Gmail, since the web-based email service requires them to be logged in. The attack requires, if you're using the Gmail gadget, which tells you how much mail is waiting for you, it's actually logged into Gmail, and therefore a malicious gadget could suck in your username and password. A user could be tricked to adding malicious Google modules. And those of you who use Google may not know this, but there's a second Google front end called iGoogle. You can see it in the upper right-hand corner next to sign in. If you are using iGoogle, you can add all kinds of things, news sources, joke of the day, cartoon of the day, the Dilbert of the day, whatever, whatever. All these, there's tens of thousands of these things, and they're called Google gadgets. And this guy's saying that, and you can also add them to your own web page, and I think Facebook everywhere, you can just do it whatever you want to do. Gadgets can attack other gadgets. Gadgets can attack the user. Gadgets can be auto-added without your knowledge. And Gadget can log a user into a different Google account and monitor your search queries from there. So there's all kinds of things that can be done with the Google Gadget. So my question this week, of course, is, do you use Google Gadgets? So far, we've got quietly waiting, 76. That's the spirit. Responses, 49% of you say no way, 38% of you Google what now? And 13% of you said, of course. So we'll talk more about that at the next break, but I wanted you to get that started.
Just another case of the bad guys taking over something that was good.
Yeah, really, exactly. And again, if you want to talk about that, actually, you know, sit and talk about, call in and talk about Google Gadgets, you can do so. That's why I'm announcing it at the beginning of the show. And in terms of last week's show, remember we talked about there's a 5 gig cap in the end user agreement with Frontier for DSL customers. Most people are saying that they're well over 5 gig and nothing's been done. So clearly they're not actually, at least in most cases, they're not actually enforcing the cap. However, I discovered that in a typical use week, in fact, Sunday morning before the show, I zeroed out my router so it would count packets for me. And I'd hit 5 gig of data, packet being about 1,500 bytes. I'd hit 5 gig of data Tuesday morning. So Sunday, Monday, 2 days, 5 gig.
I do file sharing routinely, and I did a similar experiment. I had 5 gigs in about 3 hours.
Yeah. Well, and then this week, of course, I've been watching the Olympics online, streaming media all over the place. I'm probably out to like a zillion gig by now. But that would all, you know, you'd hit that in a day.
Yeah, clearly.
Even at Silverlight compression.
Well, we even said it'll be a big killer to like folks like Netflix. Watch a couple movies, you're done.
You're done for the month.
Yeah.
The month. Yeah.
And if Netflix is trying to, you know, get you to subscribe to this, and that's the only thing you're going to be able to do. It ain't going to fly.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. We're going to the phones now. Our first caller is Walter in Leroy, New York. Welcome, Walter. How are things in Leroy?
Great show, guys. I really like what you talk about. So.
Thank you.
Actually, I've got a pretty basic question, but yeah, I got to go.
Oh, good. We finally one we can answer.
Well, I'm sure you can. But I've got a PC at home that's, it's pretty old right now. The only thing I really run on it is Microsoft Office. I've got an old version of Office 97. Really? And one of the reasons I keep it is because every now and then I bring home some work from work.
Right.
And, it's almost all Microsoft Word, a little bit of Excel, and using some of the more finer features of Excel, but not big documents. And anyway, I went into one of my local computer stores and, wanted to upgrade. I was looking for a low-end processor. And
sure.
The guy was telling, immediately the guy wanted me to buy a dual-core Intel only.
That is low-end.
That is a low-end processor.
Well, it may very well be, but what I wanted to do was talk to the guy about what my needs were, and I wanted him to tell me what the options were, and I didn't think that was too much to ask.
Yeah, it is too much.
In the big box stores, that is too much to ask.
Yes. I know that, the higher processors or even the lower processors, if any of them would run that, but I just wanted to know what my options were. So since I've run AMD, quite a bit, and I do like the AMD line, I just thought I'd find out what the options are. So, guys, what are the options for a low-end processor?
In the AMD line, it's Sempron.
Okay.
Yeah, but you don't want to go that low. I mean,
it's very inexpensive.
And a lot depends on what OS you're going to run on.
Yeah, the thing. Yeah. And you got to think of right now, but we're right in the lull of, not wanting to go to Vista because that's going to take too much.
Right. That's the
big
thing.
But then go to the next operating system, which will probably be out within the next year to year and a half. So if you get a system now, you want to also have enough horsepower to put yourself so that when the new operating system comes out that you're not left behind and saying, oh, shoot, I don't have enough horsepower that I just spent a year and a half ago.
And if you look at even a basic system today, Windows Vista and Office 2007 are they up to now? As the basic programs, sort of, you need a dual core 3 gigahertz with 2 gigs of RAM. That's a minimum system to run that OS and that application suite.
On the other hand, if you were to buy a Linux system, you could get away with a much lower system. There are a lot of new machines that are called not notebooks, but netbooks.
Uh-huh.
And they're very low-end processors, not terribly fast. They do word processing. You can run OpenOffice on them, which is equivalent to Microsoft Office. And they're fairly inexpensive. They're very light and portable. Keyboards are a little small. You really want to check one out before you buy it.
Sure.
But nobody sell, other than the netbooks and specialized stuff, most places don't want to sell you the real low-end equipment because, how do I put this politely? Most customers lie when they say they're not knowing it, they're not doing it on purpose, but they say I don't want to do much with it,
maybe just edit some video and watch TV online, World of Warcraft,
or Second Life. I want to do that,
not much, but nothing big.
Well, that is big. It's huge, as a matter of fact.
Sure.
And again, as these guys said, if you're going to run Vista and you're going to run Office, they're power hungry beasts. Yeah, you're not doing much with them, but they eat at your power.
Mm-hmm.
That's why a lot of people go to OpenOffice or Abbey Word. And today I just heard about Bean, as Bean and Abbey Word are just word processors, but they're very lightweight, very small, do 90% of what the average person wants to do, and they're free.
Right.
Sure. But when you get up to doing some of the higher end things in Excel and stuff like that, then you need the horsepower to run Excel.
Sure, makes sense.
And one of the things that you'll find better in a smaller shop like Dave's or I's or any of the other smaller shops is that they will start out with what do you need it to do rather than here's what's on sale this week.
Yeah,
well, that was my whole thing was I wish the guy would have just heard me out before he started to push things on me.
Well, no, they get spiffs.
I'm sure.
S-P-I-F-F. A spiff is a reward for selling a certain thing. So you might get a spiff for selling a system. A spiff for upselling a monitor.
Right.
That's sort of fair. And those could be monetary rewards or points toward a prize or, whatever. And that's common in the industry. It's not like they're the only ones doing it. But so they're going to try to sell you what they've got. Spiff's working.
Sure, I'm sure they are.
But if you go to a smaller shop like Dave or Steve, they get the spiff is they get paid at the end of the week. So you'll generally get what you want. Now, they will rec certainly, if they're any good at their job, and both Steve and Dave are, they will recommend you buying a little more than you think you need because your needs will change over the next couple of years.
Always sure. for the more. Right.
Well, like right. I stated, you know, I mean, I wouldn't want to put one of my clients in the position that, you know, I sell them a machine today, and then they're coming back to me a year and a half from now because the new operating system is out, and I have to tell them, well, sorry, it's not going to handle that because you didn't want to go, you know, listen to me and
especially,
go up to this level. It's just not going to handle
especially
it.
When you buy the $500 or $600 computers. You see them cheap. It's disposable. You buy a new one next year for $500 or $600, and it will be faster.
What we're seeing an upsurge in are those netbooks that cost $300, $400, $500. Travelers are taking it with them in case the TSA takes them.
Which is a huge, big thing now. Was it some court ruled that it was okay for border guards to confiscate laptops and media players with no probable cause.
Right.
And they can take them away to another facility, share the information with anyone they choose.
Right.
They don't even have to think you're stealing music. They can just do it, period.
Essentially. Yeah. And so a lot of people are buying the netbooks, transferring just the data they need to take with them, and then they go. And then if the thing gets confiscated, in terms of a company, a $500 loss is not as big a deal as a $2,000 or $2,500 or $3,000 loss. So big deal, right?
Getting back to Walter's question, it sounds like he needs to make a decision whether his next computer needs to be running some version of Microsoft Office. If sure. he does, then right. he needs the higher horsepower because well, he needs right. to be able right. to run the
or,
next
OS. Or a Microsoft Office compatible program like OpenOffice or
which
Star
would require
Office.
Less.
Much less horsepower, yeah. Right.
Now, the other thing is, if you go to a local vendor like Dave or Steve, you can still get XP.
Sure.
So again, you don't need quite the horsepower, but then next year when Windows 7 comes out and it's shiny, you're not going to be able to run it.
Of course.
But my suggestion at this point is go with a local vendor. Well, that's been my suggestion ever since we started this. And since I'm not a local vendor and I have no monetary or any other sort of interest in where you buy your computer, take it as I'm saying it. Go to a local vendor. You get more for your money. You get a face to look at if there's a problem, and your money stays in the local economy. I don't know how you beat that on any of those levels.
I like the commercial, Dave, I was running a few years ago about the kid selling you the computer was selling shoes last week and french fries the week before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, guys. Well, you certainly have given me the information I wanted. In
there you
the
go.
Beginning.
Well, that's what we're here for.
Good luck, Walter. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. It is 20 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. This is 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, Apple. Apparently he likes the bass line. He's just going to leave it up.
The repeat.
Hey, I just play the music that they tell me to. It's like starting and stopping over here. I don't know what's going on.
Sure. Well, that's whatever. Going. We can just listen in the background.
Hey,
welcome to FM.
Smooth FM.
Smooth FM. Here to get you through your night. Okay. Apple has taken a place of Microsoft for disclosing more of a... That brings me back to days I don't even want to think about. Apple has taken the place of Microsoft for disclosing more vulnerabilities than any other vendor, according to an IBM security report. Apple rose from second place in 2007 to take the top spot, number one, away from Microsoft, which had fallen into third place behind open source content management system Joomla, which has more holes in it than any other product on Earth. I thought, apparently they're only number three. IBM remained in fourth spot, followed by Sun, a newcomer to the top five, while Oracle and Cisco fell from their former positions to sixth and seventh, respectively. The introduction of a new Common Platform Enumeration, CPE, into the X-Force database introduced PHP-based Joomla, WordPress, and Drupal into the top 10 disclosure list. The company attributes their appearance to a rise in web application flaws, predominantly cross-site scripting and SQL injection attacks, that account for 51% of all vulnerabilities. Report claimed PHP would have taken fourth spot in the 2007 disclosure list if CPE rules were applied. From 2007 to the first half of 2008, vulnerabilities affecting web server applications accounted for 51% of all vulnerability disclosures. Microsoft held on to the top spot for the number of public exploits, followed by Hewlett-Packard and Apple. The three vendors accounted for about half of all exploits found in the top 10 list. Internet Explorer and Mozilla Firefox browsers had a marked drop in critical vulnerabilities from 2007. So congratulations to Apple. You are number one. We had an interesting exercise this last, year. We entirely, in the I am the systems administrator for the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology. And thank you. We went through a security audit and we rewrote everything. Everything from the bottom up, we rewrote it because there were holes all over the place. And it's not the programmer's fault. It's just the way PHP was. So we had to add a whole lot of code to do some.
And nobody was thinking about security then. You didn't have to. Everyone was good on the internet.
Right.
So, Nick, are you saying you had fellas wrote the code or you were administering patches?
No, we wrote most of the code we use.
Okay.
It's all one-offs and we wrote it ourselves. And and so, yeah, we did a lot of cleanup, but I was about to say something insanely stupid.
Isn't that how coding works? You do it quick and dirty and get around to cleaning it up later.
That's right.
10 or 20 years later.
Yeah, it's exactly right.
First you make it work, then you make it right.
Exactly. So we did that. And any of you out there who are using any operating system, we go right back to what I keep on saying. Don't be smug. It can happen to you. Our next caller is Ron from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Yeah, good morning. I have a bunch of icons down on my tray, and some are doubles I need to get rid of, which I don't know how. But one of them happens to be an icon that says updates are ready for Service Pack 3. I heard that there were bugs with it, and I was a little hesitant on downloading it. Is it okay to download it and install Service Pack 3?
Yeah. Does the message say updates are ready for Service Pack 3 or Service Pack 3 is ready?
Yes, it says ready for installation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it almost sounded like you had Service Pack 3 and there's updates on top of that.
Yeah.
Some people have reported issues with Service Pack 3. A lot depends on how cluttered.
Yeah, it depends on the system.
Did you start with XP Prime and then load Service Pack 1 and then Service Pack 2, or did you start with Service Pack 2?
Well, I have 2 in there already and everything. It just automatically has been downloading.
Right.
But lately I've been getting a notice when I boot up from Microsoft saying Service Pack 3 needs to be installed, and then go through the license thing.
Well, here's the key thing. You can go ahead and install it. When it asks you to do the backup copy or to create the backup, make sure you click yes.
That way you can uninstall it.
Yeah, this way if it bombs on you or doesn't work quite right, you can go into the add remove programs in the control panel and remove Service Pack 3.
Now, fortunately, at least for the time being, all of the security updates that Microsoft has released since Service Pack 3 came out, they are still releasing for Service Pack 2. Eventually, that will stop.
Right.
So, yeah, the short answer is definitely upgrade.
Well, yeah, I'm all for that, but I just wanted to make sure my computer's running so good right now.
As Dave says, when it says, do you want to retain backup information or whatever the actual term is, you say yes. It'll take a while. It'll take some of your hard drive space, but it means that you can uninstall it if you need to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Always go back.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ron. Mm-hmm. Our next caller is Lynn from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Lynn. How are things in Irondequoit?
Just hunky-dory, fellas.
There you go.
My son has an XP Professional version 5.1 Service Pack 2. I loaded AVG and Zone Alarm on his computer about a week ago because we had removed Trend, as I had done on mine also. And he noticed it about a week ago, which was shortly after the time I had installed these, that the monitor is taking a very long time to load just the icons. He gets his desktop picture, but none of the icons come up. So I did a disk cleanup yesterday and restarted it, and it took about, I would say, 5 minutes to load the icons on.
Lynn, one other question, though. You mentioned that you've done the AVG and you've done Zone Alarm.
Yeah.
That's only two-thirds of the full equation.
Okay.
It's less than two-thirds.
Yeah, the other thing that you really got to do is also download and run Super Anti-Spyware.
Okay, and I had that in my notes, too.
Yeah,
okay.
AVG does viruses.
Okay.
Viruses and Trojans. The whole thing of it is most of the wackos out there nowadays aren't writing viruses.
Okay.
There's no money in viruses. Mm-hmm. What they want to do is write Trojans or spam that's going to get into your computer and steal your information, because that's what they're looking for. Information that they can steal, you know, like personal information, names, address, social security numbers, mm-hmm. and all yada, yada, right. yada, and sell that to other folks.
But don't take that to mean you don't have to run an antivirus right. program, because there's still 10 oh, years yes. of viruses
and
running
Trojans
around out there.
And Trojans.
Right.
Plenty of Trojans.
I've got it all on mine, and I've got the Tango, and I do all of that. But he turns his computer off every time, where I leave mine on.
Right.
And well, I don't know whether that has anything to do with it.
How much memory does he have?
He has. Now, physical memory is 1.02400 megabytes.
Right, he's got a gig of memory.
He has available memory, 514.81 megabytes.
Right, and that's after loading all the operating system. Well, it also depends on what else he's got loaded.
Okay.
When you add things to your system like WeatherBug or the Yahoo Toolbar or LimeWire or any of that sort of fare, mm-hmm. those things all load at startup, all want to take over some stuff, all want to connect to their servers in the outside world, mm-hmm. and that takes time. The less of that stuff you have, the better off you are.
Mm-hmm.
It also depends on the speed of your hard drive, the amount of memory you have, which we've already talked about, the speed of your motherboard, 100,000 things. But mostly it has to do with how much junk you're loading up at startup.
And you can go into msconfig in the startup tab and see a lot of that stuff and okay. turn things off that you don't need anymore. The trick is, how do you know that you don't need them?
Right.
Yeah, no, does he download music?
No, he doesn't. I know that he downloads, music, but not per se. It's musical notes, because he's learning to play guitar.
So, right. No, that's something different.
I mean, I can look at his system, guys, and, you know, get an idea.
But I would suggest you take a look at what loads it boot up.
Okay.
Particularly if he's loaded any of that kind of stuff in. There's things that will check your Facebook account. There's things that'll check your Gmail account and a bunch of other little things you can load.
Java for...
Right. There's a bunch of things that you can load. And if he's loaded all that stuff, it takes time to load them every morning.
Especially, you can sort of see some of that, too, in your system tray if you have a lot of icons loading there.
Mm-hmm.
Which he doesn't. Okay.
Well, but also there's that little left arrow.
Where it hides the icons, so you don't know they're there.
And I pulled all those out yesterday because I wanted to see exactly what there was.
There you go.
So, well, I'll figure it out, but I thought it was just bizarre that I had just installed those
two,
and then all of a sudden, bingo. And, of course, he's upset about it.
Well, one of the things to check is in AVG, you can set it to do an automatic scan every day.
Okay.
It may be doing that.
It may be doing while it's doing the scan. You can set it to scan at startup or scan at noon or scan it at 5 p.m., somewhere like that.
Yep.
So that can add to the time if you have it set to scan at startup.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's sort of going back to your another question you threw in there about turning it on or leaving it off. That's one of the main reasons people leave their computers on, is they don't want to wait for it to start up all the time.
Right.
But then that comes.
I have to convince him of that.
Well, that turns over to the on the other side of that. How many hands are we up to now?
Yeah, right.
The wasted electricity of running your computer when you're not using it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've addressed a lot of that in the last couple of years by switching to LCD monitors instead of CRT monitors. So there's a lot less power draw. But yeah, it's the second most heated debate. In
Mac versus PC.
Right, this first, turn it on, leave it off.
You know, this is my fault because I did this.
What a lot of people find useful is if you know you're not going to be using it for several hours or at night, go ahead and turn it off.
Hey, Lynn.
Yeah.
One other thing. Who bought the computer?
We did together.
But who shelled out the
money? Well, your part loads slow and the rest
out,
of the...
He shelled out the money.
Okay.
But beyond all of this, I think the best thing to do is to make the checks we just suggested and see what happens. Let us know what it ends up being.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Our next caller is Sharon from Victor, New York. Welcome, Sharon. What's your question?
We purchased a Dell laptop computer for our granddaughter about a month ago to take to college. It's with Vista. You start it up and it keeps rebooting. It does work in safe mode. My question was, do we send it back to Dell or do we bring it to someone local?
If it's under warranty, Well, having them fix it is probably best if you want to keep the warranty, but it will take forever.
If it's a software problem, which it sounds like, then that's not covered under warranty.
Sharon, one other thing, though. How long ago did this start happening?
Well, not a week ago, about 3 days ago.
All right, what you want to do is if you can get into safe mode, you want to go back in, and there is a system restorer. And what you can do is go back, say, 4 days, pick a restore point there.
Yes, something broke or something you installed isn't fully compatible.
Right.
And so by going back to this restore point, you're going before that problem occurred.
Right. I mean, it came with Vista. There was nothing else. I mean, we didn't put anything else on it.
But yeah, you can though go back to look for the system restore in the control panel.
And if there isn't one, then on the other hand, if you've loaded nothing of your own on this machine yet, you can do a restore of the system from the restore CD. And that'll put it back to the way it was when you bought it.
Which is basically erase the hard drive and restore everything as it came out of the factory.
Right.
Okay, I'm just writing this down.
Yeah, try the restore point first. Go back like 4 days or so, and that'll at least get you to where, you know, it was working fine.
And one of the problems we see, almost especially with Dell and HP, is they bundle on the computer a lot of extra software, trial versions of things, advertisements and things like that, because they get paid by the advertisers. What did we read? It was like 50 to 100 bucks per unit, so they can drop the price that much, too. And so all of that extra stuff running on there could be, you know, one of those could be part of the problem as well. So one of the reasons
First thing I do is rip all that stuff out.
What the HP, what is it, the DX mini towers we sell, all of those extra disks aren't installed, which is one of the reasons we like the HP.
Right.
It comes with all the stuff. You can choose to install it. It's not pre-installed, which is nice.
Because the courts came down on companies because they were sitting there loading it with all this junk because they're getting, you know, back pay for it to put that crap on.
Right.
And then they wanted to charge folks additional money to take it off. And the court said, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, we're getting paid $100 to put this stuff on. So we can lower the price of the computer $100. If you don't want the stuff, we got to raise the price of the computer $100.
Right.
Yeah, I remember you did say that, and we just bought ourselves an HP, and we loaded everything ourselves. But we sent away for this Dell.
It
came with everything. So. And it was cheaper, obviously.
Anyway, try that and let us know.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks. It is one of the problems that people have. We hear this all the time.
Yeah.
People saying, well, I bought a laptop, and I got McAfee with it. Yeah, it's you a 90-day trial.
It's 60 days sometimes.
Sometimes it's 60 days.
Or
and if
it's
past those
office.
60 days, then it's not working anymore and you are not protected. Got to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes, Mr. David Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. 39 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we're delving into the mysteries of IP, TCP, UDP.
UDP packets or TCP packets.
Right. All right. Microsoft said it will deliver a dozen security updates next week on their monthly visitor to fix critical vulnerabilities in Windows Office, Internet Explorer, and the Media Player bundled with Vista. I win. Of the 12 updates, Microsoft pegged 7 as critical, its highest threat rating. The remaining 5 were labeled important, which is only one rung down. And it's as is its practice, Microsoft divulged little information about each update, limiting the disclosure to naming the affected software and spelling out only in general terms the nature of the bugs. 4 of the 7 critical updates will patch Office, with 3 of those aimed at Access, Excel, and PowerPoint, which means the other one's got to be aimed at Word. What are they thinking? Another update downgraded to important will patch one or more bugs in Word, the suite's word processor. The other critical updates will fix unspecified flaws in Windows IE and Media Player 11, the edition included with Windows Vista. Microsoft did acknowledge that each of the 7 critical updates would fix flaws that could be exploited remotely, an indication that they were among the most serious of vulnerabilities and could potentially be used to hijack PCs. We don't know exactly what they are yet. We will next week. The 12 security updates will be posted around 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on August 12th. So, ladies and gentlemen, start your updaters.
That goes back to the survey a little earlier. These are disclosed bugs. How many undisclosed bugs are they not fixing?
Well, by definition,
all
an unknown number, right?
Yeah, all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right, all of them.
We'll get around to it someday.
Yep. Our next caller, Walt, in Spencerport, New York. Welcome, Walt. What's your question?
I just bought my daughter a USB hard drive.
Yes.
I have Windows Vista with media player, and I store all my MP3s either as MP3 or WMA. Now, she's going out to college, and she's going to get an Apple or a Mac PC.
Right.
Can I use that hard drive on the Windows and then use it on the Mac also?
The yes. USB drive?
Yes, with some caveats. USB is much slower than FireWire for sustained throughput, so you're better off with a FireWire drive. If you're going to use it for primary storage, yeah, USB is fine for backup because it doesn't matter how long it takes.
If you're using it for backup and transfer, whatever, then it's fine. It
doesn't matter how slow USB is.
Well, it doesn't matter what file system it's formatted.
Well, there's three issues. The next is the file system. If it's formatted FAT32
for Windows,
then the Macintosh sees it as a Windows disk. And some Mac files don't live on a Windows disk very well, especially system files.
But MP3s do.
But MP3s and regular documents would.
So you could store something on that drive and your daughter could read it off that drive.
If it's formatted as...
Or vice versa.
If it's formatted as NTFS, which it probably is under Vista, then the Macintosh can read but not write an NTFS volume. So you may need to reformat it for FAT32. Or what some people do is split it in half or whatever percentage you want, half of it FAT32 and then half of it HFS for Macintosh.
Okay, that sounds good.
There you go. Yep.
All right, thank you very much.
Thanks.
We hear that a lot with the little flash drives that are almost always coming FAT32. Works fine on my Mac, and I store my Mac files on it. Sort of, but they're not Mac files anymore. They're Windows files. Mm-hmm. Once they go to a Windows disk, and some files don't survive on a Windows disk.
But very few.
Yeah, right.
I mean, there are very few that don't survive. I mean, you don't want to scare people.
Right.
If you're writing documents
TIFF,
and you're...
Yeah, the general picture files and music files, things like that are no problem.
I mean, they're pretty fairly esoteric files.
But if you try to put your iMovie project on it, that may not work.
Right. But if you're putting... Well, I guess you can get have a couple of 8 gig.
Yeah, big flash. But in addition to flash drives, most hard drives come pre-formatted FAT32. And you plug them into your Mac, and your Mac says, oh, a Windows disk, and starts using it. So you start saving stuff on there, not realizing it may not work for your specific type of application.
You should put together a list. Because most things will. I mean, if you're not doing iMovie and you're not doing some
GarageBand.
It's typically Mac-specific programs.
Right.
But cross-platform programs like Word and cross-platform formats like JPEG work just fine.
Right.
Some of the newer drives, some of the C drives now, the first time you plug it in, there's a little RunMe program. And it asks you, are you on a Mac and then reformats it for HFS? Are you on a Windows and reformats it for FAT32?
As it does with an iPod. But all this having been said, Walt should know that his WMV files, WMA files,
Windows Media Audio,
are not necessarily easily going to play on the Mac. She's going to need...
She's got to have the codec and everything.
Yeah, if you install Flip for Mac.
The MP3s will.
MP3s will,
no problem, but the WMAs are going to be...
And that's Flip, the number four Mac. Got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Rake, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 49 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Rake.
I'm Chris Reich.
I'm Rob Linton.
It's 53 minutes after the hour.
If there was only audio during the breaks... Folks, would you get just as much?
All right, although it's clearly too late for most of you, grab your footy jammies, grab a mug of hot cocoa, and sit Indian style around the rocking chair because he's already wide awake. It's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave?
Okay, Tom and Mary Parrott. Tell you what, a delay on your part does not constitute a rush on mine. So if you don't have the time to take the initiative to ask that child of yours if their computer is okay and ready to go back to school, and they're ready to leave, tomorrow, and you're bringing in the computer today, it ain't going to be ready tomorrow. You got to take the time and, just sit down and ask them. I know they're busy, they're adults now because they graduated from high school. They're going off to college. They're busy. Big social life. But, in the midst of them going and coming, stop them and say, hey, is your PC ready to go back to school? Does it need cleaning up? Is there any issues with it? Should we take it in and have it looked at by one of the local computer guys? because too often they're packing up to go back to school and it's, oh, by the way, my computer is having this or that, and I need a fix because I can't start classes and not have it ready. And then the parents are bringing it in and saying, can you have this ready tomorrow?
Nope.
It ain't good.
And they look at you with such anger. Yeah. Okay, there's 15 people ahead of you in line. You want to call each of them and ask if it's okay to cut ahead?
Yeah.
We've been there.
Yeah.
You know, so folks, take the time, check it out, because just like, you know, getting all their stuff, make sure they've got all their stuff that they're going to need to go back to school. That's one of the items. And it should be periodically cleaned out. I mean, kids at school, that's a whole problem. They have their computers and a friend might come in and say, oh, I just got this great utility or this great song. Here, let me plug it into your laptop. And they plug it in and then all of a sudden the machine is infected. But yet the child might say, I didn't go to any sites. I didn't do any of this. Right. They didn't. But they're infected. So take the time, have it checked out, make sure that it's good. That should be one of the checkoff things on a list, getting my kids ready back to school.
Right, and now is not too early. All right, kiddies, that's it. We're giving Uncle Dave his shot, putting him away. Put your hot cocoa mug, smash them over his head. That's, I think, our best bet this week.
Thank you.
Strangle him with your footy jammies, and that's it for another week of Uncle Dave. Wow. Wow.
You like that?
We
see, you got me wound up during the
break.
Did
you want to strangle him with his footy jammies? Is that what I heard?
Yes.
You
are that's
a
what you
mess
heard.
Today. My
I am
goodness.
A mess today, for heaven's sake.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Dave and I were having a discussion.
Lively discussion.
A discussion in the break.
The flies right. on the wall were laughing hysterically.
They were falling on the floor.
I'm pretty sure that we'd get fined if people heard what you guys talk about off
man.
The air.
Fined? We'd get stoned. There'd
That's
be people
right.
outside with pitchforks and torches. All right, we're gonna take a break, and a much-needed break. And this will give the folks at Wham! A chance to bring you the stuff you really listen to the radio for, the news, the weather, the sports, all the important things. On the other side of all of that, we got a couple of folks on the line. Please stay on the line. We'll get to you shortly. If you're not on the line, I don't know why you're not, because we're having more fun than should be legal. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, the long-suffering Rob Linton, who manages to put up with all of us whether we like it or not. I'm Nick Francesco, and you are listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. Unfortunately, you're only listening while we put it out on the air. Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. As you know, every week on Soundbites, we do a poll. Last week's poll was about the alleged 5 gigabyte download upload bandwidth cap on Verizon.
Frontier.
Excuse me, on Frontier. All I ever think about is Fios anymore.
Yeah, you hear from other cities that they're getting 30 meg down, 40 meg down. That's annoying.
And up in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, these people mostly were unhappy. Out of 319 votes, only 6% of you seem complacent about the whole thing. This week's poll was about an interesting thing I read in the paper that Google Gadgets open the door to your system for an attack. Gadget lovers were dealt a blow on Wednesday when two researchers outlined what they called a hole during a Black Hat presentation. The Black Hat conference, of course, is going on this week, where everybody gets together and talks about how incredibly unsecured everything is. The attackers can forcibly install Google Gadgets. They can read the victim's search history. Once a malicious gadget has been installed in some specific circumstances, they can attack other Google Gadgets. They can fish usernames and passwords from victims and so on. Really, the sky is the limit once the browser is under the control of an attacker. That point is exacerbated by the fact that people trust Google to be a trustworthy domain, making the attacks even easier. So Google Gadgets, which you can put on your iGoogle homepage, or you can put on your own website. So you can actually just visit a website that automatically installs a Google gadget on your machine and causes some form of damage. So it's a little tricky. Google has no response as of yet. I'm sure they will very soon. Yes, sir.
Question from the peanut gallery. These gadgets from Google, are they from Google? Are they
not all of them?
So we can't blame Google for
No, not specifically,
not necessarily.
Right. But okay. They all run on your iGoogle homepage, and that's where the problem lies. So this week,
where does one get them?
From the iGoogle homepage has a link to all the ones that they've got, and other people are starting to put them out on the web themselves.
Okay, thank you.
So the question is, do you use Google Gadgets? And the choices are, of course, no way, and Google what now? So far on the Soundbites website, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, because you got to get it right. We have 99 votes. Only 11% of you are using them. 35% of you said Google what now, and 54% of you said no way. Now, once you're done with the poll, see, I know you people, and I know that you want more out of life than just clicking a single little button. So when you're done with voting, take a look at the little yellow box underneath. You will see a link that says give us your opinion. If you click on that, it takes you to my website at AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Oh, drat these computers. They're so naughty and so complex. I could pinch them.
I would have to get hold of my Q38 demodulator. Space modulator, sorry.
And then you can leave an actual opinion up to 255 characters. And that will be saved and shown to everyone in all its glory. And while you're there, check out my website. I do run a newsletter. You have to be a member, but it's only $15 a year. And for that, you get our forums, you get the newsletter, and you get to search all the old newsletters, which is, I believe, personally invaluable and worth more than every penny. So, and then join us back at the Soundbites website, where some of the coolest people on earth hang out. Actually, many of them hang out in both places. And you can get your questions answered and things done and all that other nifty stuff. But that's our poll. That's what we do on the poll. Oh, and before we go on, we should talk. This is
Club Week.
Club Week.
The Apple Cider meeting for Macintosh users will be this Wednesday, August 13th. And we're at a new, different location, although for longtime members, it's the old location. It's the Risen Christ Lutheran Church, 1000 Mosley Road in Fairport, south of 31. That's between 31 and Guernsey. And we're going to be doing a member show and tell. So if you have a cool website or an application or a gadget or something.
Not a Google gadget, maybe.
And want to, take a couple minutes to show it off. It's really interesting to see what other people are using their computer for. Things that, you wouldn't have expected, or the ordinary email and whatnot. And it's kind of neat to see other people doing stuff.
Yeah. And again, where is that?
That is at the Risen Christ Lutheran Church, 1000 Mosley Road, 7 p.m. this Wednesday, August 13th.
Very good.
And you can get more information at applecider.org.
Very nice. And is this the permanent place, or is this just the August
place? This is just for August, because the East High School is closed in August, and they won't let us meet there.
Although I suppose that's a little short-sighted of that.
We could show up in the parking lot, but then we'd have to find an outlet to tie the projector in.
And you'd have to do it fast before the cops showed up.
Yeah. I'm surprised somebody doesn't bring a generator.
Yeah, we
don't tempt them.
A couple of times.
I have met the cider people.
Yep. I know, but that'd be cool.
There have been a couple of times when the custodians forgot to unlock the door that we almost had meetings in the parking lot.
Inverter in the car battery.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, we have laptops, so it would just be everyone huddle around one laptop screen.
That'd be kind of
bizarre.
Yeah.
Although the projector on the whole side of the school would be cool.
That would work really well.
Yeah. I got to wait till dusk.
Till dusk, yeah.
Then you'd get cited for,
disturbing the peace.
Well, folks going by and they're distracted while they're trying to drive, seeing this projection going up on the side of the building.
Well if you do it on Ohio, you do it on the side facing Ohio Street.
Yeah.
There's less traffic there.
There you right. go.
And all the people there can watch your movie.
There you go. All right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ted in Churchville, New York. Welcome, Ted. What's your question?
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. We have Windows Vista Home Premium on our HP notebook, and just wanted to know if we should install SP1 or Service Pack 1 for mm-hmm. that. And I'll hang up and wait for your answer.
Yeah, just go ahead and install it. With the Vista... Yeah, you want to keep it up. It's going to correct a few of the other issues. So by all means, definitely go with the Service Pack 1.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks.
But again, same recommendation to our earlier caller. Make sure you click on the save file so you can remove it if there's a problem.
Exactly.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. And that's generally true of so many things.
Yeah, leave yourself a way out.
Yep.
It's the best way to describe it, so you can backtrack.
Our next caller, Bob from Churchville, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hi. Great job, guys.
Thanks.
Got a quick question. Now, I heard on your show, I believe, a while back that Google has stored every search anybody has ever made on their hard drives or whatever. And I'm curious now, I know some of the others probably do too, but on emails, what's a mail service? I mean, not that I'm, like, it's probably sounding like George Orwell in 1984, but is, like, email, do they keep a copy of every email everybody's ever sent? Or is there one server that doesn't? Or,
well, in terms of Google Mail, they do index your mail so that it can be searched by you. I don't believe they keep mail that you delete, however.
Theoretically, they back up their systems.
Right.
Although, who was it? Charter Communications a few months ago. They lost several hundred thousand email messages and told their customers, sorry, you should have backed them up.
Right. Well, and now the thing you got to remember about Google search is they tell us they don't keep track of who made what search.
Unless you yourself have a Google account, then you can log in and see your searches.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But they index every search.
Right. But not who searched it.
But like all the email servers do that, like AOL and...
Sure. They keep track of your mail, and theoretically they back it up.
Especially
so.
AOL and Google, because your mail lives on their server, period. With most service providers like Frontier and Time Warner here, you download the mail to your computer and it deletes it from the server. But Google and AOL are among the two companies that use something called IMAP, so all of your mail lives on their server, does not live on your computer.
However, let me speak for the conspiracy theorists in the audience, since they're going to send us mail. It is unknown whether or not everybody keeps copies of all of your emails to turn over to Homeland Security in the case that somebody asks for them, whether or not they ask politely. So,
and I
the
would
answer
argue,
is we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know, but I would argue it's improbable that they keep it long-term. If they're making backups,
simply in terms
they're
of storage.
Probably rotating backups. It would just take too much storage. They would need a mountain in Utah hollowed out.
And again, to speak for the tinfoil hat crowd, if you believe the conspiracy theorists, the DHS already has all your stuff anyway. So it's redundant if AOL and Yahoo and Google
keep
it.
And the NSA is monitoring all your cell phone communications. And
then the second NSA and the grassy knoll has got you in its side. I don't have any idea.
Well, I wouldn't think they monitor everything, but I know they have that keyword search I saw on the History Channel where they'll pick a keyword will come up or a red flag or something.
The Echelon Network.
I have nothing to hide, but it just seems like an invasion of privacy if they keep everything forever.
Well, it certainly does seem that way, doesn't it?
Yes.
And it argues for writing manual letters again and sending it to the postal service.
That's right. Well, we used to.
Because at least then it's illegal to open someone else's mail. I'm sure someone does it somewhere, but it's...
We used to have an amendment that protected us, but I don't think that we do have that anymore.
You got it, Nick.
You don't want to get me started.
Let's not get any of us started. But the thing is that, you know, it's all for our protection and our security, because it's the only way the terrorists lose.
Right.
As if our mail is being backed up at the NSA. So,
well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well, and that goes back to what we were mentioning earlier about laptops getting seized at the borders. Well, that's to catch the terrorists.
Yeah.
Also, for the 99.99 whatever percent of people that aren't terrorists and have lost their stuff. For the one guy they catch,
well,
they'll be touted.
I'm sorry, but somebody has to say it. America's afraid, and this is how they're reacting.
Yep.
You know, it's...
Well, that's how the terrorists win. Because
they've made us afraid.
Yeah.
And a police state.
Just the thought of that they could do this or that has now sent us cowering into a corner.
I was just listening to a podcast the other day, and that for a U.S. citizen coming back into the U.S., it's a lot easier, but for a foreign national, they are interviewing a guy from the UK, and the customs declarations you have to fill out on the plane, full of stupid questions like, are you bringing in any illegal substance? And yes or no.
Oh, you caught me!
Yeah.
Oh,
well, what they do that later is when they find it and you said no, then they've got you for perjury, too.
Right.
But, I always pleaded the fifth.
Yeah.
I just said I'm not going to answer the question.
Yeah, he said...
And I was taken into back room.
That'll get you strip-searched.
Yeah. Well,
I thought so, because they took me to back room, but I wasn't strip-searched. Yeah.
From the UK especially, they said for business or for pleasure, you don't need a visa to get into the U.S. unless your declared job is journalist.
It depends on you the country of origin.
Well, he was specifically saying UK.
Okay.
And so he was joking that the mess and time it takes to get a visa versus going to Guantanamo, I'll get a visa.
All right. All right. Hopefully that will conclude the political portion of Soundbites. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Rake, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and although it sometimes doesn't sound like it, you're listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Amalgamated Association of Morons, Local 6 and 7/8.
AAM. I'm a charter member. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are certainly sound bites. All right, before we get back to the phones, you should know. No one will deny the global celebrity of Angelina Jolie. She's on the cover of magazines, stars in blockbuster movies, is a rating bonanza every time she appears on TV. Now that she's had twins, she's got triple the appeal for some fans. The spammer community loves her, too. On average, about 2.28% of the total global daily email volume contains subjects like Angelina Jolie naked, Angelina Jolie nude movie, Angelina Jolie naked video. According to Secure Computing's latest trustedsource.org spam report, Angelina Jolie, for example, is unknowingly luring many to eagerly install Trojans onto their PCs. And so she now tops the list of celebrity spammers. Which leads us to the important question, who else is on the list? Number two, Barack Obama. Number three, Paris Hilton.
Barack Obama naked? I don't think so.
I didn't say naked. Really, I just said that's the celebrity who's next.
Okay.
There's a guy I know, and I won't say a friend, a guy I know who is recycling every this close to racist joke ever written. And sends them to a whole list of people, of which I'm on the list. I've now got him blocked. Paris Hilton, Britney Spears, Hillary Clinton at number five, ladies and gentlemen. George Bush, who I don't even think uses email. I don't even think he, you know, the intertubes are not something right. He deals with. At number seven, Jessica Simpson. Number eight, Osama bin Laden. Okay, George Bush ahead of Osama bin Laden. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Number nine, I don't even know where he gets... How does he even get IP in his cave? I don't even know. TCP IP in his
satellite
cave.
Satellite link.
Number nine is Brad Pitt. And at number 10, for no reason whatsoever, Michael Jackson. So those are your top 10 celebrity spam people. When you get an email with one of them in the subject line, the probability that it is at least spam, if not actually a Trojan waiting to infect your machine, is very... very high, so be careful.
Back up your system before you open the email.
Exactly. So far, we have not seen any Steve Ray naked video spam going around the internet.
That's a relief.
I cannot imagine why.
Did you get my list on how to be a successful overlord?
I did.
Number one, my legions of terror will have helmets with clear plexiglass visors, not face concealing ones, so I can see when they're not my legions of terror.
Right.
And
there's some very funny ones in there. If you're into bad sci-fi, yeah, then you know that that's the answer.
My ventilation ducts will be too small to crawl through.
Right.
Shooting is not too good for my enemies. We don't need any elaborate plans to how you're going to die. I'll just shoot you.
Shooting is too good for you. No, it isn't. Just shoot him. Shoot him now. All right, our next caller, Angela from Webster, New York. Welcome, Angela. What's your question? Angela?
Sorry, guys. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear us?
Yes. Okay. Sorry, I'm not Angelina Jolie. Listen, I've got a question.
Believe me, not a problem for us. For me, at least.
Okay, great. Don't yell at me. I'm running an old IBM ThinkPad laptop with 98 SC.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's to replace the desktop that doesn't work anymore. My ex-boyfriend sent it to me. At any rate, it's only got a Pentium 2 processor.
Yep.
And I use CompuServe as a dial-up.
Yep.
Okay. I downloaded a game off of a website. Can I mention the website?
Sure.
Pogo.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Pogo, P-O-G-O?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Great gaming place.
Yeah. Well, the game is Bejeweled 2.
Yeah.
It didn't say that it was for Vista only. When I went to run the .exe to open it, it took like an hour and a half. It's saying that it can't find the Vista plugin Does it only run on Vista?
No, it still runs on XP and 98.
Well, it runs in Java, which is probably your problem. You need a newer version of Java that may not exist in 98.
Oh. So would I just look for a Java download and update the latest version of it?
You can certainly go to... You can certainly do that, java.sun.com. Or is it sun. Java.sun.com, I think.
Okay.
Steve's looking it up even as we speak. And Java you can developers. Certainly download the latest version, the user version. You don't need the developer versions.
Yeah, Java SE6 update.
Right,
10.
SE6. Or, so, yeah. So that would be fine. Steve is looking up as to whether or not the SE6
and you might
actually
look
will talk to 98.
You might also want to look, instead of going with Bejeweled 2, just going using Bejeweled.
They didn't have that as a download, though.
Well, if you do a search. If you do a Google search on Bejeweled, just get the original version. That would probably work with 98.
Yeah,
whereas Bejeweled 2 might be, I'm not sure, you'd have to check the specs for XP and Vista.
None of the current Javas work on 98.
Okay.
So look for an older version of Bejeweled. If you do a Google search on Bejeweled, you might find somebody that still has it and posted there, and it might work with Windows 98. Because it is a fun game.
Yeah, they just come up with an iPhone version.
Great. Anyway, there you go.
And you're going to start finding that more and more with older OSs, is you got to be more careful about looking at system requirements when you buy things or download things. Just more and more things aren't going to work with an older OS.
Well, and the real problem is that nobody even thinks Windows 98 anymore, so they may not bother to even put that in the qualifications one way or the other.
Well, that's the problem I had, though.
They may not even bother testing it. Yeah.
Right.
Well, I had the issue of a person brought in a machine running Windows 98, and they wanted me to clean it up and make it go faster. I can't.
You're right.
It is what it is, folks. Well, it's been running slower. Yeah, because the other applications are moving on. You haven't with your operating system, and they just don't support it. So a lot of the stuff that worked back with Windows 98, that's what it is. 98,
only gonna get so good.
You haven't moved on, so I can't do much for improving what is no longer supported.
Right, right. It is a problem. All right. Thank you, Angela. Our next caller is Keith from Farmington, New York. Welcome back, Keith. What's your question?
Gentlemen, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Hey, just want to know, I haven't heard much from the push to give free laptops to poor nations, which I believe is a total waste of time.
Right.
It seems to have petered out.
Well,
the public version of it has. That expired at the end of last year. But
right.
The organization is still running.
They're still giving millions of PCs away. There are several now,
too.
As a matter of fact. The OLPC, One Laptop Per Child group, is giving away the XO. That's going to have Windows on it next year, so it'll brick in about an hour, and then you'll just be able to use it as a door stopper.
You say giving away. Well, they're being sold, aren't they, Nick?
Well, they're being donated by people with money.
Right.
Well, the question I have, will there be a way to track the IP address of the computer?
Always.
Where it ends up?
Yeah, always.
Because I can just see we're going to get more and more Nigerian relatives dying. Once they figure out how to, I just can't see how that is going to help.
Well, Angelina Jolie had a Nigerian relative who wanted to send me money. I don't know if you...
Oh, her?
Yeah.
No, I get the one with Bill Gates and Wendy's or something.
Oh, yeah.
But you haven't... to me, it just seems to be... You know, they was on 60 Minutes, and you saw news stories, and there were competing groups.
Well, there was even two folks here in, Newark, that got busted on the 60 Minutes.
Oh, yeah, that was the guy who fell in love online.
Yeah, and he was buying all this stuff, and right. It was literally some folks down in Nigeria using stolen credit cards. And this guy was a go-between,
right. Being
promised, oh, yes, I love you. And it turns out it's this tall, six-foot guy.
But in terms of the one laptop per child, that is still going strong, although they're having internal squabbles. There is Intel has the Intel Classmate, which is a rival to that. There is a billion netbooks out now that are rivals to that sort of thing. Nations buy them and distribute them to their people. And third world nations in particular... There are still, a million of them going here, a billion of them going there. So
Peru is a big buyer.
Yeah. And a lot of the middle African nations are buying them.
I have a story, if I can.
Sure.
I used to travel a great deal over the world, and I've been to Nigeria twice. And when I worked with the Nigerian technicians, great guys, not a lot of experience. So when I told them to move a wire, for example, from one screw hole to another, I would have to tell them, take a screwdriver and loosen the screw and move the wire over to the next screw. Because if I didn't tell them, take a screwdriver, they might go over there with a pair of water pump pliers. They don't have practical experience. They don't have toys to play with.
Right, and that is the problem.
These one laptop per kids are not going to help people today. They're going to give the kids the experience to be smart adults as they get older. This will improve the lives of people in all these countries that need these laptops.
Yep. Yeah, I think in the long run, they're a very, very good idea. Is there the possibility of corruption in the governments stealing them for whatever reason? Yeah, fine. That doesn't make it a bad idea. It makes it a bad implementation if nobody checks on that stuff. But you're right. We can check what IP address is going where to a certain extent. And many of these things are meshes, so you don't even have to have wireless. If, for example, one person has wireless in a village, has a connection in a village, whether it's wired or wireless, in the city, let's say, and there's a string of people heading out toward this village who are all online, they can all share the network connection all the way out as far as to the point where you've got hundreds of people on it, and then it starts bogging itself down. But that sort of thing is doable. I have an OLPC, an XO, as they call it, laptop. It's terrific. It's certainly a very limited machine. But for what it does, it's great. And in fact, one of the very coolest applications is, and I don't remember the name of the application, but the icon is a dolphin. And you run this on both machines, and it's essentially a measurement device by echolocation. So it puts out a specific tone at a specific frequency. The other machine picks it up and sends it back again, and you measure how long that took, and that tells you how far away the other machine is. Is that not the coolest little application ever?
And I thought Turtle Graphics was cool, but you're right. That's better.
That's way cool. And you can share things. We were at the CIDR meeting where we demonstrated this, and we were sharing an application among several of us and drawing pictures together and writing text together. It was very, very cool.
I read listened to an interesting story on Escape Pod, which is a science fiction story podcast. And it was about in essence, a Peace Corps worker in Middle Africa, and they were growing organic computers for their kids. The kids were just learning leaps and bounds and clashing with the adults who had done things like their fathers and their grandfathers forever. And this one kid was so upset because he was trying to tell his father, you got to rotate your crops. You can't put the corn there every single year. And dad didn't want to hear it because that's the way his dad had done it and his dad had done it. And
Even
with the computers, you still have the clash of the kids think they know better.
Well,
but as the kids grow up, they can know better.
Well, yep. Back in the Peace Corps showed up a movie to a bunch of villagers on, I don't know why they thought that would be a good idea, to a bunch of villagers about growing crops and rotating crops. And afterwards we said, what'd you think? And the first thing everybody said was, well, we like the chicken. And you go back and you look at the film and nobody thought, well, there's one scene where a chicken goes like by the corner of the screen. But what was being shown was so foreign to them.
Yep.
And nobody had explained it to them. They couldn't relate to rotating crops and different fertilizers and all this yada, yada, yada. But when the chicken ran across the screen, they knew what a chicken was. And they got that. And that was the thing they brought away from it. That was very shortly before the big change around to we'll send people there to plant crops with them and stay there for a couple of years and show them how to rotate it. That worked a whole lot better than some sort of 8mm show and tell about a subject that they had not been prepped for. All right.
Another thing to be considered is that these laptops will be strong motivation for literacy.
Yep. Yep. It's exactly right. Well, and mostly in English right now, but that's
true.
Neither here nor there. Although, no, the OLPC, the XO, has at least dozens of languages. All right, our next caller is Helen from Chi-Lai, New York. Welcome, Helen. What's your question?
Well, last week, our area lost power for 3 hours.
Yep.
And it's caused a problem with my computer. I have a Mac.
Yep.
The thing is, I have a generator outside, so it couldn't have been off long.
Right.
A second, maybe, because it kicks right in. Now I cannot change my time, and my day is not correct, and I can't change it.
What happens when you try?
I don't know how to do that.
Oh, you don't know how?
I don't know.
Under the Apple menu, you go to System Preferences, and then from there you go to Date and Time.
Uh-huh. Now, also, I think I've tried that, and that asked for the administrator's name and password. Does it not? Right.
It can if your control panels are locked and you need to unlock them. So you have to prove you're the administrator to make a change.
Well, Helen, why don't you hang on the line and we'll come right back to you after the break. Is that okay? Okay, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and Helen. It's 40 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are on the line with Helen from Chilai, who is in the midst of telling us her woes with power loss and getting the date and time correct on the Mac. Helen, are you there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There you go. Steve has a probable solution.
Yeah, when you get into the date and time system preference, you may need to unlock it with your administrator password to prove that you own the computer.
Well, see, that's the problem. My son bought this for me years ago, and he put his name in here. And now I know, certainly I know his name, but I don't know his password, and I have asked him, and he has forgotten. So
it's the same password you have to use to run any system updates or install any software. That's the administrator password. So you've never done any of that either?
No, I haven't. I'm not really savvy on computers yet.
Has it ever told you that you needed to update the operating system?
I'm sorry?
Have you ever gotten a message on the screen saying there's an update for your system ready?
No.
You must have that turned off. You should turn that on immediately and run the updates. There's security updates
for
them.
Well, she can't because
she doesn't know the password. Right.
How old is the computer?
That's why you remember the password, because you have to put them in all the time.
At this point, I believe the only thing you can do is bring it into Steve.
Okay.
There are procedures you can do. It's kind of tricky that you can boot your administrator disk and reset your password.
Mm-hmm.
But it is kind of tricky to do. You may need to bring it into the shop.
Okay. Okay.
Now, you do understand he does this for a living, so they will charge you.
Yeah. Yes, I understand.
Okay, good.
The other issue is that most of the time, the date and time synchronizes itself over the internet.
Huh?
So can you still get to web pages and internet pages?
Yeah.
All right, so that must be turned off to not synchronize
right.
over the internet.
Yeah, definitely bring it in.
We've seen a lot of problems, especially after thunderstorms, where Ethernet ports get blown out.
Uh-huh.
Because of the, you're using cable or DSL into the computer. In fact, I did that last night. The beautiful storms came through last
night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Shut down and unplugged. And I remembered to unplug the coax from my cable modem. And this morning when I turned the computer on, I couldn't get on the internet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I forgot to plug the cable back in. But,
So 10 minutes of swearing before you went,
Yeah, I forgot that. And then the other thing, too, you mentioned you had a generator. Generators aren't known for clean power.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do weird things to a computer by not giving it a clean AC power. The power supply in the computer can absorb some of that, but
uh-huh.
we also see that power supplies get blown that way,
okay.
too.
Okay, so you've had this problem before.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
So the other thing we would suggest is having a generator is a great idea, but also having an uninterruptible power supply on your computer
mm-hmm.
is an exceptional idea.
Mm-hmm.
And you should get the kind that runs in line. And I forget what they call them. Steve, you remember.
The automatic voltage regulation is usually what it's called.
Right. There are multiple ways you can run an uninterruptible power supply. The best kind are the automatic voltage regulators that Steve was talking about. And what they do is they constantly run your computer from the battery and then constantly recharge the battery from the line. So that if there is a spike or a brownout or anything else, that's all absorbed by the battery and never touches your computer. So even if there's a faint, even there's a short 1 second drop in power before your generator comes on, the battery runs fine. And then as a generator comes on, its power is not clean. It fluctuates terribly. And that's all absorbed by the battery as well. So let us suggest that you do this. So, Helen, you've got three things. Well, two things. Everybody expects Spanish Inquisition. You got to bring your system into Steve, and you got to look into an uninterruptible power supply, which you can probably also get through Steve, to plug that in on the line along with it. And that leads us to our cautionary tale of the day, of course, which is for the folks out there who are listening, please, please, when you see a thunderstorm rolling through your area, it is best to turn off everything and unplug it. And by everything, we mean including the cable modem and anything that's connected to an electrical outlet or an Ethernet cable.
Or a telephone.
Or a telephone wire or any of that stuff, because all of those things are conductors of electricity. And when you get zillions of volts, or is it amps, coming through your line, then bad things will happen to your
computer. Surge suppressors do nothing.
Don't. Not yeah. Surge suppressors. They truly don't, simply don't work. But we're going to take a break so that we don't have to work for a couple minutes. Back in a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 50 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hey, here's something exciting. Microsoft's security team will help third-party developers of Windows application and add-ons find and fix bugs in their software. They told us on Thursday. The program, dubbed Microsoft Vulnerability Research, or MSVR, is a formalization of things the company currently does, not a brand new initiative. According to Andrew Cushman, the company's director of security response and outreach, this is work we're already doing, he said. We'll report vulnerabilities we find in third-party software, and we'll work with them to identify, resolve, and mitigate those vulnerabilities. Microsoft has at times gone public with work it's done in collaboration with other software vendors. One of the most recent examples was in May and June when Microsoft worked with Apple on flaws in both its own Internet Explorer browser and Apple Safari. Then, however, Microsoft took shots at Apple, telling users in one of its security advisories they should stop using Apple's browser until it was fixed. This was a case of the pot calling the kettle beige. Earlier this year, nobody gets that joke anymore, as that show's been off Broadway for 25 years. Earlier this year, Microsoft helped out Yahoo by issuing a kilobit update through its Windows Update service that disabled a buggy ActiveX control installed by Yahoo on PCs that played tunes purchased from its now-defunct online music store. This was a huge brouhaha in general because people were buying stuff from the Yahoo music store when it went out of business. They couldn't play their music anymore. That was a big brouhaha. But here's a big one. We were talking earlier about notebooks in airports. Travelers who are irked when forced to unpack notebook computers at airport screening stations will get some relief later this month as the Transportation Security Administration, the TSA, begins letting people with designated checkpoint-friendly bags leave the hardware inside. The new rules, which take effect August 16th, allow notebooks to pass through X-ray screening while still in a bag as long as the case meets agency guidelines. A checkpoint-friendly case must have a designated laptop-only section that completely unfolds to lay flat on the X-ray screening conveyor belt. The bag cannot contain metal snaps, zippers, or buckles inside, underneath, or on top of that laptop section, nor can it sport pockets on the inside or outside of the laptop-only part of the case. Now, we put the challenge out there, and the big manufacturers overwhelmingly responded with innovative products to provide a win-win for travelers and TSA, said Kip Hawley, the agency's chief, in a statement Tuesday. Some 60 manufacturers expressed interest in the guidelines, and 40 tested prototypes at one of three airports the government agency designated last month. Although the TSA said that some current bags meet its criteria, particularly sleeve-like carrying cases that lack pockets or zippers, most will be new products. Some will be available by the middle of the month, the agency added, which is good because that's when the new regs go into effect. Several bag and case makers have been touting checkpoint-friendly models, including Targus, which sells its zip-through bag for $99.99, and Scuba Design, which has a line it's dubbed Check-Through in the works. Even with a bag that meets the TSA's guidelines, however, nothing is guaranteed. At the bottom of an informational page on the TSA site, it revealed a fine print. Given TSA's use of random screening protocols, TSA reserves the right to rescreen any bag or laptop regardless of the design of the bag. Rescreen is TSA speak for, we're going to keep it until we're done with it, and then you can't get it back. So, again, this leads us to people who are buying netbooks in order to get their laptops. Say, you know, they don't care if they get taken because yeah. There's nothing major there. And, of course, That leads us to netbooks sparking Linux redesigns. Linux is being redesigned left and right to work better on netbooks. It's similar to what the problem that Microsoft has. Linux is designed to be a full-fledged operating system. It does everything a full-fledged operating system does and is therefore heavier than netbooks really would like to have. The big difference between them and Microsoft, however, is that Linux companies are smaller and therefore much more agile, and we are seeing versions of Linux that are specifically designed for netbooks. The netbook, remember, is the sub-notebook genre, you know, 8-inch screens or 10-inch screens at the most, and super light. So you'll be able to get things like the Ubuntu Netbook Remix and stuff like that. All right, that brings us to the end of another thrilling, episode of Soundbites. As we all fade off into the sunset on our trusty steeds, I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the mighty Chris Reich, who every single week, whether we want him to, every single week, comes in here and records the show and makes it sound pretty, makes it sound way better than we normally sound. He's doing better than Leo Laporte now. We're beating the sound quality of Leo Laporte. Rob Linton, of course, who managed to stay awake for much of the show, I noticed. That was very lovely of you, Rob. We appreciate that, and we thank you for your whatever it is you do. I'm Nick Francesco, 59 minutes after the hour. You've been listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on 1180 WHAM.